Hope to have something here in the near future. At least I've got my headgear on right. All right, there we go. We're going to talk about exploring boundaries. And I started thinking about this some time ago, but I still thought that it was maybe appropriate. And since David only gave me a week to prepare, I thought I better go with it. So these are just some thoughts, and you all know that I'm not an expert. It does tie in a little bit to David's lesson last week about the Wizard of Oz and the fact that sort of a boundary there between what was real and what wasn't, you know. And so the idea of boundaries and what should we be paying attention to and what should we not. And so I just had a list of a few things that, you know, to me are the purpose of boundaries. You want to protect people, you want to keep them safe, you want to control people sometimes or things. I thought I'd change that to things. Looks a little too people-oriented there, like keeping people out of your office, Dave. To define, to mark clearly, you know, what the territory is and to show what's in and out of bounds. And some boundaries are imaginary, they're idealized, and some are physical boundaries like the walls that we have here. And so the idea of who sets them and what's really right, you know, what should we pay attention to? Now, David loves cats, so I have to put several cat slides in here. But we have something called gerbil TV. These are the gerbils that normally reside at the school, and the kids just love them. But our cats seem to as well. And when we wonder where our cats are, we'll go into the other room, and we'll find them just watching, just hoping for an opportunity, I suppose. It looks like he's in a protective mode there. I don't even know if you can see. There's a gerbil in the wheel there, and then they're a little frightened, perhaps, and in the corner. But, you know, it's one idea, to protect. We have to have these cages to protect the gerbils. And one did get loose the other day, and fortunately the cats didn't eat it, but, you know, they were trying. But the idea for us is that we're part of an enclosure, a sheepfold. I found this picture I thought was pretty nice, where you can actually, it's a little dark, but you can see the shepherd here at the gate, just as Jesus is in his role. And I have this scripture, you know, the Lord made us, and we are the sheep of his pasture. That's a very comforting thought. That we have a boundary around us that protects us. Now, then there's the idea of control. And I don't know how many recognize this from the Flintstones cartoon. And I thought I'd ask Tommy if he would lead that song. But, you know, maybe someday Fred will win the fight and let the cat out for the night. But if you remember the scenario, the cat, as soon as he shuts the door, jumps back in the window. And we have essentially that problem. We have to put the cats out at night because they take up so much room, and then in the morning they'll start chirping and, you know, making noises and things. But, you know, this is something. You have to control. You have to have a door. You have to have some kind of gate. And when I thought of one example, at least, of this, I remembered that in the time of Nehemiah, there were a lot of peddlers, if you will, people hanging outside the gates of the city of Jerusalem, and they wanted to conduct business 7 days a week. And so Nehemiah just had to shut the gates and tell them, you know, he was going to really get rough with them if they didn't move on. And so, you know, the idea of using these boundaries and a gate perhaps to control is something that we need to think. Now, in terms of defining and marking territory, you'll notice that I have no animal illustrations here. I thought it was probably better to just let that go. But I did want to tell the story. I think I've told a lot before of when our illustrious group was hiking in the mountains, and we had maps. We planned out this trip, and we planned to travel along a road that was clearly demarked on the map. And so we went over and over. We had to keep turning around, going back over the mountain. And finally, someone realized that wasn't a road at all. It was a state line boundary. So again, you know, you have boundaries that are sort of meaningless, and I had to show this picture again because, you know, here we were out west looking for one of these artificial, sort of meaningless boundaries, and I think now with GPS, I wonder how far the X is. That's probably what they were redoing. They were probably moving the whole thing, you know, about 3 inches. And but then I thought, you know, here's a boundary that's the gate, physical and real, keeping us from getting to the boundary that we were really interested in. So, to define the marked territory, I think about, and Tommy led the song about us being the sheep, and it's It's just so important, and a part of this that he has defined for us, you know, a boundary. And it says that, you know, there'll be a separation. And I won't read all of this, but, you know, the sheep and the goats, the right and the left. And this is from Matthew 25, where, if you remember, Jesus talked about those who would be accepted and approved, and they were like, well, when did we do any of these things for you? And Jesus said, as long as you've done it to one of my brothers, you've done it to me. And then on the other hand, if you haven't done it, you know, you're going to be on the other side. And so there's a distinct separation, and we'll hit on that just a little bit at the end. Now, the idea of the guide is to stay within bounds. And, you know, any game that has to do with a ball, like tennis or basketball, you know, you have your boundaries. You have goals, and then you have boundaries that you can't get past, or you have, you know, you have a foul, or you have some other problem. And since the Super Bowl is next week, I want to talk about this a little bit. In light of my own, not professional, but nonetheless football experience, because, you know, my mother and father wouldn't let me play organized football, and you can probably imagine why, especially after they'd spent thousands of dollars for my teeth and braces. But it was okay to go out in someone's yard and beat ourselves to death in that way. In fact, we played at the hospital. We used to play at the hospital, and it was very convenient. The time a guy broke his nose, we just let him in, you know, because very convenient. But this was actually the preacher's house for Main Street, and we lived right behind it. And there was a young boy there one time, Ricky Wilson, and so we'd get in his front yard and play. And this is just the map quest view. But I decided I'd do a little overhead to show what boundaries really mean in this context, because, you know, there wasn't a lot of operating room. Plus, you had these, it's almost like golf with the traps and the you know, bad things that are in there. So we had a driveway, we had a four-lane highway, we had a sidewalk, and fortunately there was a bit of an embankment right there, or we'd gone right out into the street. But once you started feeling the incline, you knew to slow down, or you're going to, you know, have to deal with more than a linebacker. And then there were trees there, and these were oak trees, as are, you know, everywhere, and of course oak trees have acorns, and for some reason, which is inexplicable to me now, we played in our bare feet. And so there was sort of a little, you've seen the dancing when somebody scores. Well, we were dancing around the acorns just even trying to get the ball. So I wanted to illustrate, you know, this was real football, you know, when we did it in our yards with all the obstacles. But the idea of to guide is to stay within bounds. There's a Greek word, hamartia, that means just basically missing the mark. And actually the word has to do more with not just missing it here and there, but just having really a sinful nature and missing it on a regular basis. So that's sort of the introduction. I wanted to talk a little bit about the physical kingdom that God established in the beginning. Really, you know, Eden, we don't know of any real boundaries. You know, God created this garden and walked through it, and Adam and Eve were there. And when they sinned, I mean, they just had one rule, basically. And, of course, they transgressed that. They went past that boundary, and they were excluded. And, you know, where there had been no boundary, now they had an angel with a flaming sword that obviously nobody wanted to mess with. And then later, Abraham was taken to Canaan, but there were very vague boundaries. And he actually only owned that one little plot of land that was the cave. But the name Hebrew really comes from a word that just means wanderer, nomad. You know, it's like no boundaries. And then in Egypt, we know that eventually they ended up in Egypt, and Joseph was a slave, obviously had boundaries, had prison boundaries, and then he became the ruler. And so all those boundaries kind of went away, and his people came in, his family, and then they eventually became slaves. Exodus became a time of freedom. And they were loose. They had no boundaries in a sense. They were headed to the promised land. And then because of their doubt, they ended up being bounded again and having to wait 40 years, being bounded almost really by life and death until all of them had died. Once they got near the land of Israel, ready to invade, the Jordan was sort of a boundary, a natural boundary, but they didn't really make that a part of the nation's boundary. And it's just kind of interesting how that possibly some of the least exciting biblical texts, you'll find how these boundaries are described. Not that they shouldn't be read, but they're just not as exciting. And then later, the kingdom became split. We talked about this, I think, the other day. Only one king in the whole history had the entire nation of Israel during his whole reign. It's kind of interesting when you think about it. You think about how that legacy, how many years the nation existed. But it was split almost immediately. And so there were boundaries there. And then ultimately they became conquered several times. And during the time of Christ, then there were several different segments. And each had its boundaries. And I think it's interesting to think about boundaries in terms of the temple and the tabernacle. These had very well established boundaries. And certain people, only certain people could go into certain areas, like the holiest of holies. Or there's a court of the Gentiles, the court of the women. So they had to deal with these boundaries as a part of their worship. And then later on, the nation is split, but it's also split not just physically, but spiritually. You know, there's some people that believed in God, some didn't. But especially there was this idea that, you know, they were the chosen people and that they were very separate from the Gentiles. And so there's a lot in the Bible about that boundary and removing it, really. The Jews had set it up. Peter was the first one to really be given the task of tearing it down in Acts 10. And there weren't any subcategories. There weren't any hierarchies of well, these were original Jews, so they get the best jobs and the best places. And we read in these scriptures, Romans 12 and Galatians 3:28 are both saying essentially the same thing. You know, there's no difference between the Jew and the Gentile and any other class of people. So there are no boundaries amongst, you know, the people based on what their origin is or what their nationality is. And then Paul talks about breaking down these barriers, how Christ did that. And I think we have to do that in our lives. But he's talking about the Jews and the Gentiles, those who were far away in his terminology and those that were near. And he says he is our peace. He's made the two groups one and has destroyed the barrier or the boundary, the dividing wall of hostility. And the whole purpose of Christ's coming was to reunite, to take out some of these boundaries that had been artificially introduced by the people. And again, there are no restrictions on who can enter into this kingdom. And that's the beauty for us. I also thought about the times when people tried to build things back, like with the temple. The temple was destroyed. It was built back. And if you remember what happened, those that knew the old temple wept because it just wasn't the same. It wasn't as big. Later, there was a new boundary created when the temple veil was rent, when Christ died. And then there's a lot in Nehemiah about rebuilding the walls and how they did it at an incredible rate with God's help. And there's a scripture in Isaiah 58:12 that talks about us being the repairer of broken walls. And in a way, this is a real important job for all of us. You know, there are boundaries that come in between us sometimes. And it's like a wall that's been broken in a way, a wall that should keep us together. And we are sort of, you know, we need to be thinking about how to restore those walls just as they did in the Old Testament times. But we need to know in a bigger sense maybe what are the boundaries and what are they for? What do they mean? So God created boundaries for us. F. Lagarde Smith, who's spoken here a couple of times, is going to speak again in a few weeks. Has some good books you ought to investigate. But in this one, he says there's nothing particularly wrong with boundaries. You know, God created boundaries between light and darkness, between the ocean, between the land. And I think of, you know, what are the main boundaries? I think of the obvious, what are the first and second greatest laws? You know, to love God with all your heart, all your being, and to love your neighbor as yourself. And so I think of God's boundary in a little bit different sense than maybe just rules and laws. You know, because we kind of get hung up on that idea. It's against the rules. There's a law against that. But when you think of the boundary of what God is trying to enclose with his love, trying to enclose a people, I think we can see it a little bit differently. Let's see. I think we've seen that one. And so we try to create walls ourselves. And a lot of times that, you know, really isn't appropriate. Sometimes we're trying to wall somebody out, and maybe ourselves in. And if you've ever painted yourself into a corner, you realize all of a sudden that maybe that wasn't such a good idea, how you did things. And I'm just quoting something here because it's so easy to get way out on a limb with something that's where somebody is defining something that there's really no basis for. And it's just a quote. The kinds of changes in the worship now being encountered that are more insidious, and that word sort of is like, you know, treacherous or a snake in the grass kind of thing, are singing enhanced by performers holding microphones in the pews. You know, that's obviously, anti-scriptural. Dimming of the lights for emotional effect, hand clapping as a show of approval, support, or excitement. You know, heaven forbid that we show a little excitement in our worship. But again, here's somebody writing about how terrible this is, how insidious it is. And I'm thinking, you know, we need to back off a little bit and really think about what's important and what's not. But, to try to control people with these ideas is bad. Again, we know that there are boundaries. They shouldn't be moved. This is one of the basic principles. You know, how would you like it if your boundary was moved? You know, people do that at work. They scoot the separators a little bit every day. And I think Dilbert had a cartoon on that I didn't take the trouble to find. You're just making their space smaller and smaller. But that's not right. You know, everybody has a right to something that God gave us, and we shouldn't try to take away from it. Again, I quote from F. Legard Smith's book, where he talks about how the Jews tried to treat the law of God, and they treated it with great respect. But he says the rules of the Mishnah, by which was really their oral law, are extensions of scriptural commands. The idea of the rabbis was to make a fence for the Torah. That is, to make a fence around the scriptures, sort of inside the boundary, so that they wouldn't have a chance of getting close enough to the real boundary. And of course, they made these according to their own ideas. And then he says, although the Mishnah was not formally compiled until the end of the 2nd century AD, it was a process of fence building that Jesus was really fighting against. And they had good motives, perhaps, but they were adding rule upon rule. And then he says, the more I read the Gospels, the more I'm impressed with the number of fences that Jesus came to tear down. So we need to be careful when we try to define boundaries. It reminds me of when a renowned astronomer, based on the perhaps inadequate telescopes of the time, determined that there were canals, man-made type structures on Mars. And he drew pictures of them. And other people began to look, and they said, well, maybe canals, but I've got a little bit different picture. Because everybody had their own interpretation of where things lay. And, of course, we know now that these are not those types of canals. And so where should we find our religious boundaries? Sort of have this image of contractors, you know, with all the plans, and they're looking at the terrain, and they're trying to decide where to build something. And they see a river and a cliff, maybe, and, different structures, and they try to use those, incorporate those, or let them be the defining parts. But I also know that a lot of times we treat things as though there are huge holes here in the landscape. We need to build something over it just to make sure somebody doesn't fall in. And a lot of these artificial boundaries are such an attempt to save us, and yet they just create more of a problem, really. And so I have the idea of sort of a parable. You know, it's not illegal to make up your own parables. At least I hope not. Because I'm going to have a little parable here. It's not in the Bible, but the parable of the two farmers. And you got one farmer that spends all of his time protecting and perfecting his fences. Now, you can imagine, we have farmers here in the audience. What if you spent all of your time just making sure the fences were the best fences the world had ever known? But you have no time for planting a crop. So what happens? You don't have any harvest. You got great fences surrounding nothing. So obviously I've got these out of order, but the one farmer had no fences. He says, yeah, I don't want to be like that first farmer. I'm not even going to have fences. And so while he's trying to plant the crops, all the wild animals are moving in and ripping it up and taking away everything he's got. So guess what? He didn't have a harvest either. So I think, you know, we have to be careful about how we view boundaries and how we interpret them and how we sort of force them on other people. And we may take too much interest in it. You know, we might view this boundary as something that we polish, and if there's a little nick, we paint it, and, don't set a cold glass and let there'd be a condensation ring on it. And that's all we think about. We have to, not worship the walls. And I think that's one of the things we end up doing. We worship the things that are just the boundaries and not sort of divorced of the meaning of why they would be there and what they're trying to accomplish. Now, we all probably decorate our walls. One of the things my mother let me do, of course, I don't have a picture of it because she wouldn't let me take, but just put anything I wanted to on my walls within reason, I did pretty good, but it was just memorabilia and stuff like that. And I just thought, this is great. We had these, it's called Celotex. It was like corn shucks, but you could just stick pins, you could just put everything up there. And I thought, this is neat. Instead of saying that my wall had to be perfectly white and clean, I mean, I even used it for dartboard. Now, I think that did get me into a little bit of trouble now that I think about it, but it was a perfect dartboard, and that didn't go over well. But as far as pictures and things, and I think, God intended us for us to have things that were important. Just like he says here in Deuteronomy, write the commandments, write the meaning of life as I've given it to you all around you so that you see it and that you share it with others. Of course, you see a little bit of the swirl of the Starry Night in the background. So you just got to know Susie for that. But sometimes I think we feel a little squeezed by the boundaries. And this is a perfect picture. I mentioned the cubicle getting smaller and smaller, and this is sort of the end result. And Dilbert's complaining, and the guy says, you were spoiled before. this is your cubicle. And a lot of times we get strapped by these artificial or man-made things. And so I think we have to know what's important, what boundaries are important. And so I just take this from the whole lesson that Jesus gave in Matthew 23, basically talking about, you're decorating the walls and polishing them up and making sure it's perfect. You're tithing these little bitty tiny seeds, and you've missed the point. And so we don't want to do that. There are more important matters. And so I think the unimportant things are what really squeeze us and hamper us, and the really important things free us. Paul said, for freedom, Christ made you free. So, what are the important boundaries? Well, another cat picture, just for Dave, but, we noticed that this particular cat began pushing a box across the floor, and I don't know if you've ever seen that. This is the cat that chases aluminum balls, but pushing the cat, and so we realized she was trying to get in the box through the little hole there, and she couldn't get in. So when I opened the top, there goes the cat. But you know how cats are. They love getting a bag or a box. They like that feeling. Sometimes, we need that too. We need that secure feeling that, there's something around us. Sometimes, we just have boundaries for teaching reasons, and I won't go too much into this. We establish them like for a child. Kara has an expandable gate on the steps. We do that for our babies, and then we take them down later after they learn to walk. So I think we need flexibility. If you're not familiar with this scripture, then I think you ought to be, about the wineskins. And Jesus said this. He says you don't take an old dried up wineskin and pour new wine in it, because the gas is let off and it just ruptures. He says you allow some flexibility. And again, the purpose is to not rupture, to not have boundaries that are laid wide open. But they're flexible, but they're still boundaries and they don't break. And so, we have to try to figure out what God is after. We hear again and again how we're restoring the New Testament something. And unfortunately, sometimes without that flexibility, all we're doing is restoring New Testament Phariseeism. And I think we need to make sure that that's not what we're doing. And I think about the West. I love Louis L'Amour and the stories and the free range and people that set up razor wire. And you think about it, a lot of times what we've really done is set up razor wire, and people get hurt by it. And, we need to, it's a little opposed to the idea of having boundaries in the sheepfold, but you didn't see razor wire in the sheepfold, and I think that's an important thing. So we need to watch out for false teachers, and especially that we are not them. In Mark 7:7, Jesus said, "They worship me in vain." This is a quote, though, actually from the Old Testament, and their teachings, I believe it is, are rules taught by men. We have to be careful of that. Be careful of our interpretations. In Romans 14 is a great chapter that illustrates that. We think of all the rules that Paul laid down. And then he has several instances, like in Romans 14, where he says, back off a little bit. Don't worry about the food so much that it separates you and causes problems. Don't worry about the day that is sacred or whatever. He says, don't be a stumbling block or an obstacle. And to me, that's another boundary that we've put in. He says, let us therefore make every effort to do what leads to peace and mutual edification. So, you know, we've come to the final word, or at least almost. Remember the four things we talked about? God's boundaries are to protect, control, define, and guide us. One thing that's so great about Forest Mill, I think, is that we can have some variations in our beliefs and still fellowship together. It's great. I mean, you know, of course, you know, we don't want someone bringing in a false god or something. We can't go too far, but we have that flexibility. And we just have to be careful about how we interpret things. And we have to be careful that what we set doesn't offend somebody for no real reason. And we have to keep studying, because it's really our interpretation, our understanding that God's going to deal with. You know, it's not what somebody told us to believe. It's what we really believe that's based on our study. And again, I want to say, you know, you don't worship the walls. You worship God. And so, sort of the final frontier, there is a boundary that we all have to cross, and that is the boundary that goes from this life to the next. And so a few scriptures here. Remember the story of the rich man and Lazarus. And the rich man wanted some help. He wanted Lazarus to come help him, who he hadn't helped at all in his life. And Abraham says, there's this big gulf. There's a boundary that cannot be crossed. And so we don't want to be on that side. But God also says, in a similar way, in a way that things are so separated that they can't ever get back together, we and our sins are separated. And I just want to say, you know, we want that crossover from death to life in a spiritual way. And just as the Wizard of Oz wasn't a wizard, it's actually the opposite of that with God. You know, we see the big voice. In the Oz, it wasn't anything really important or big, but with God, this is all real. And so we want to have our lives right. We want to be able to be in the boundary that encloses us as his sheep. If there's anyone here this morning that needs to in any way come and present themselves for prayers or for baptism, to enter that fold, won't you come now as we stand and sing this song?